My name's Jim. I'm an alcoholic. It's good to be here. It's good to be sober. My sobriety date is November 19th, 1987. My home group is the sponsorship group. We meet Sunday night in Chatham at 8:30. It's an active meeting. It's a meeting where we have some fun as well. And we go to rehabs, detoxes, jails, any place that'll let us carry a message of hope in recovery. Going to meetings and telling my story has made it easy for me to stay sober since 1987, and that's a long time for me not to drink. Now, if you're new to AA, I'm not here as a spokesperson for Alcoholics Anonymous. In fact, I would never be poster boy for AA. They would never elect me to any significant office in AA, but nevertheless, I kind of hope that you look at me like I'm the president of AA. I remember when I was new to AA, I was delighted that there were no rules in AA. I was like, thank God, I don't have to listen to anybody's crap. Nobody can tell me what to do. You know, all that. Now I'm sober 23 years, and I kind of have come full circle. I wish we had some damn rules. Well, not for me, but for the new people. I'm an alcoholic, and all that means is that my body processes alcohol differently than most people. When I drink, things happen. Man, I can't tell you everything that happens, but it feels good while it's happening. And when I say feels good, I mean for me, not for anybody else. I mean, people, you know, some people actually enjoy my drinking for a short period. You know, it's like the guy, oh, Jim, he's so much fun, until I'm like peeing in their bedroom. You know, Jim's so fun until, like, he comes over and parks the car in the front lawn. You know, Jim, he's so much fun until he's, like, trying to run out the front of the house with your TV. When I drink, it makes all my problems go away while I'm drinking. When I stop drinking, you know, the next day, you know, when I'm hungover, and everybody wants to tell me what I did wrong, and they're accusing me of things I'm not quite sure they really happened. You know, I don't have a look. Most of my story is hearsay. You know, and people have told me what happened, and I fill in the blanks. I take a little bit of liberty to make me sound better. I had my first drink. I was 16 years old. And this kid, Mark, called me up. He was a bad kid, and I like bad kids. If you're a well-balanced guy and you wanted to make friends with me in high school, I would not go anywhere near you. I didn't trust you. You know, there's an old saying, never trust a man who doesn't drink. You know, you didn't drink, you were suspect. You had to be a cop. You know what I mean? Not a good cop, a bad cop. A cop that would put me in jail, that wouldn't accept a couple bucks, you know. When I drink, I feel like Superman. I feel like I can do things, I can say things. You know, I remember I was, when I learned how to drive, I wasn't a good driver. I mean, I drove fast, but I didn't have very good control. I was a nervous wreck around other vehicles. I was a little shaky. But when I started drinking and driving, it was a world of difference. I mean, my cars didn't look as good because they were dense, like, on all sides. But it seemed to flow in and out of traffic, okay, a lot easier. I remember I hit a lot of things when I drive, when I drink. A lot of mailboxes. Mailboxes seemed to be my favorite thing. There were a couple bushes, a few trees, a long section of guardrail, a telephone pole. There were six guys in Passaic. They were on the sidewalk, walking a little too slow in front of my car, and I convinced them to get off the sidewalk with the front of my car. I hit some other cars, not a lot of them, nothing. I mean, we did have a head-on with a van. I wasn't driving, I was drinking, but I wasn't driving, so that doesn't count against me. I don't know when a normal person would learn the lesson. You know what I mean? When they would learn that you don't get in the car when somebody's drinking. You know, my daughter has never gotten in the car with anybody drinking. She's 19 years old. She wouldn't even consider it. I mean, I never got in the car with somebody who wasn't drinking. It's funny. My sponsor did this radio show, and it was anonymous. You know, and they called him Alcoholic Al. And he got on the radio, and he said, you know, he's telling a story about how he went in the garage and he put the tailpipe up to the with the hose in it and put it up to the window, and he ended up killing himself. And the neighbor came ambling over, opened the door, and started pounding on his chest, breathing back to life. And the radio announcer goes, "Oh my God, Al, are you serious?" "Yes, that's what happened." He goes, "Oh my God, I've never met somebody who tried to kill himself before." And my sponsor goes, "That's funny. I've never met somebody who hasn't." When I drink, man, my sponsor says drinking has taken him to places National Geographic's never seen. That means something to me. I don't know very many people who have seen the underside of a urinal. Keep drinking. You know, I don't know a lot of people who have had the roof of their mouth sunburned. Keep drinking. This other guy said, he said, you know how you know if you're alcoholic? If you've been run over by a car you're driving. Or if you've been arrested while you're in jail. I drink and things happen that are really, really just crazy. They have this book up, you know, someplace around AA. It's a 44 questions. Now, you know, I'm alcoholic, which means that I have probably a lot of problems when I drink. A lot of things are happening. It's pretty eventful. But when I stop drinking, that's the problem. Now, if you look at that book, and it speaks a lot of questions, and it talks about drinking. Now, if you were to substitute drinking for thinking, okay, and go through the questions. You know, have you ever lost your job because of your thinking? Oh yeah. Have you ever been arrested because of your thinking? Have you ever failed out of school because of your thinking? Have you ever lost a relationship because of your thinking? I mean, it's my thinking is the problem. When I'm sober, substitute thinking for drinking, and I got a big problem. Okay, I think a lot. I've never done it very well. It's never, all the mistakes I make, I never learn not to think. I mean, I think a lot. I wake up in the morning, there are occasions when I'm taking a little bit less action in Alcoholics Anonymous than I ought to be. I wake up in the morning and it's like I'm in oncoming traffic. Okay, in my mind, I wake up, I'm laying in bed, and all of a sudden I think about the IRS. I'm thinking about my car. I'm thinking about the car payment. I'm thinking about the insurance payment. I'm thinking about the surcharge. I'm thinking about the bill collector. I'm thinking about the girl. I'm thinking about this. I'm thinking about, and I have like 100 thoughts and unresolved just things going on. I haven't even opened my eyes. My foot hasn't even hit the floor, and I'm like, I'm dodging like taxi cabs. You know what I mean? It's like, oh my God, oh Jesus Christ. You know, how do you deal with something? How do you deal with a head that eats you alive? Okay? The only thing I know, well, there's two things, drinking and Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I can go to a meeting, I can tell you how I'm doing, I can share my feelings, you know, every day, what's going on in my life, and to a certain extent, I get some relief. But I don't get enough. You know, what I discover in AA, keep going to AA. If you're new, you come here, you share all your problems, there will come a point where it's no longer effective. That's what I experience. If you're an alcoholic, I mean, if you're not alcoholic and you come to AA, I don't know what the hell you're doing here, okay? There's better places to go. But if you're an alcoholic, you come here and you don't work the steps, what you're going to discover is that you're crazier sober than you are drinking. That's my experience. My experience is the longer I'm sober, the nuttier I am. What happens? I stay sober for a little while. At first, I feel physically well. You know what I mean? You know what it's like when you stop shitting your pants? Okay, you feel a little bit better. Okay? You feel a little bit better. Okay? You stop like having like acid indigestion. It's like, oh, the pain's going away. You're like, ah, oh, man. You know, you're like not so yellow. You can see, you know, you can remember stuff. The head's not pounding. You pay a couple of the warrants off. It quiets things down. You get the family off the back. You get a new job. You get, you know, things go well. Then I go to work. And then I notice my boss looked at me a weird way. He didn't say hello like he normally does. I'm thinking, what was that about? Then I see him talking to somebody else in the office. I'm thinking, why are they talking about me? Right? And then what happens is there's conspiracies. Okay? All sorts of things are going on. They're talking to people, and I'm thinking, oh, shit. Why are they talking about me? What's going on over there? You know? And I go with it. Because what I do is I can't say, shut up, head. Just shut up. Shut up. I can't do that. What I start thinking is, I believe it. I believe my head. And what I do to these people who are all out to get me, who are screwing me over, secretly plotting my demise, is I seek revenge. Okay? I'm going to get even with these sons of bitches. Okay? And I start out small on that work. I notice they're not paying me like they're paying everybody else. They're taking advantage of me. So I steal the goddamn stapler. I take it. No, might not seem a lot. Okay, but I took it from my coworker. It's gonna piss the shit off out of her. Yeah. I take it. It's got her name on. I'll even leave her name on it and keep it at home. Okay, after what she did to me. Right, and then I notice I come in early. The one day I'm like a minute or 2 minutes late. My boss is like, hey, where were you? I'm like, you son of a bitch. After all I've done for you, I'll show you. I'll start forging my time card. Okay? Because what I'm going to do is I'm going to get even. And I think back of all the things I've done for your company. Thinking, okay, I think $20,000 ought to call it even. Okay. Now I have to figure out how to get it. Right? I mean, I can bring those thoughts home, too. You know, stay sober for a while. Don't work the steps. Get a girlfriend. Okay? Get a girlfriend. Okay, and this is what you do. Stop talking to your sponsor. Okay? Because he's going to interfere. Come on. Okay. She's got the wristband off. What's the big deal? Okay? Don't talk to your sponsor. He's going to foul it up on you. And what you want to do is you want to cut back on your meetings. Okay? Because there's other guys that are going to hit on your girl. Okay? They're looking at her. They're thinking, oh, look at. Right? And for a couple weeks, she's going to pay a lot of attention to you. Right? Everything's going to go well. You're going to hear wedding bells. You're going to pick out names for the kids. Oh, goddamn. And then, you're going to notice she says hello to another guy. Oh. And then you think, why'd she do that? Then you think about it for 3 or 4 days. You don't say anything. Right? And then you just watch her. She looked at that guy, too. Oh, I wonder what she's doing when I'm not watching. Right? Then I think about it. Right? And I get insane. Right? And then I'm thinking, oh, my God. She's gonna leave me. She's probably got somebody picked up already. Oh my God, where am I gonna go? Who am I gonna go? So then I start picking out one. Thinking, oh yeah, I gotta get something going over here, so that one doesn't. You know what I mean? Pick up the slack. You know. Meanwhile, nothing's going on. You know, I am insane. Am I making that clear?
Yeah.
Okay. I am insane. What I have is alcoholism. Okay, the longer you separate me from a drink and not develop my spiritual awakening, okay, not make me okay in my own skin, the crazier I get. Okay? I have had periods of my sobriety where I should have been locked up. Okay? I remember I went to this meeting one time. I was chairing a meeting, and this guy was like, he was very insistent on sharing. And I figured, they selected me to chair the meeting, that I ought to kind of control the meeting. Okay? Make sure that everybody that has what I would agree to, you know, to share about, let them share. This guy, I didn't like him. Okay? In fact, I heard him share a lot at other meetings and at the same meeting. I figured he's had his chance. He's not going to screw up my meeting. So the guy attacks me after the meeting. Right? And I hit him with a chair. Okay? Okay. Now, that's not something you want to tell your sponsor about. Okay? Because if you're new, let me tell you something about being sponsored. They act very nice until you ask them to be your sponsor. Then they butt into everything. Everything. They want to know where you're going, who you're talking to. Are you going to a meeting? Did you do what I told you to do? Did you write it down? What are you doing with her? What are you doing now? Are you stealing from work? Did you file your taxes? Jesus, they just get involved in like everything. And I tell you, I can't think of anything better I've done in AA than get a sponsor. I mean, because I couldn't have worked the steps without a sponsor. Okay, I wouldn't believe that the steps would work unless I had a sponsor. I wouldn't have somebody that was like somebody that would watch my back without a sponsor. Okay, but I'll tell you, it's difficult to sponsor an alcoholic. I mean, any alcoholic. Okay, and when you're new, you're thinking, huh, I'm doing this guy a favor. Yeah, right. I think back, I always thought, you know, I was such a good sponsee. You know, I would borrow money from my sponsor. I wouldn't even think about it. Like, you know, a loan to me was simply optional payback. Payback, you know what I mean? If I could come up with some reason why you hurt me or shorted me or, you know what I mean? I wasn't good financially. You know what I mean? I wouldn't meet my sponsor where he wanted me to meet. You know, I was a horrible sponsee. Okay, but he didn't care. His job was to show up to be a service, you know, and he took that job seriously. You know, he took my call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, without pay, without remuneration of any kind. In fact, it cost him financially, it cost him sleep-wise, it cost him time, a lot of aggravation. Other people would go to him, they say, why do you sponsor him? And he goes, oh, because that's what you do. Somebody asks you to sponsor him, you sponsor him, you just do it, you know? And as a result, you know, his position is that as a result of sponsoring people like me, he hasn't had to think about himself as much. Okay, and he's had a freedom from his mind. You know, this deal in Alcoholics Anonymous, the 12 steps, having a sponsor, you know, having a home group, having, you know, some friends in AA, having sponsees, this stuff works. I mean, I don't know. I don't know how to sort of fix like a very irrational person like me without Alcoholics Anonymous. Because most of my life, I'm pretty peaceful. I have a lot of hope for the future. I laugh a lot. I have a decent life. You know what I mean? I have money in the bank. You know what I mean? I have a decent job. I have like, you know, vehicles. You know what I mean? I have like a place to live. You know what I mean? I have everything that you kind of typically would want, okay? I've got a daughter. She's never seen me take a drink. You know, I have a good life, okay? Which is impossible for somebody who's wired like me. Why? Because I'm a lunatic. Okay, how do you fix a lunatic? How do you control somebody like me? How do you control, like, somebody who's terribly irrational, who's afraid of everything, who's resentful, who's bitter, who's vengeful, who's a thief, who's a liar, who's a racist, who's a pig. I mean, Those are some of my better traits. Okay? I don't play well with others. Okay? Deep down inside, I am rotten to the core. Okay? As a result of Alcoholics Anonymous, I live a life of service where I help people. Every day, I help people. I make a life and death difference in many people's lives. I'm nobody special. Okay, but what I've done is I've geared my life around the principles I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous. Okay? Come on. I went, you know, like before AA, I committed a lot of fraud. Okay? I signed a consent decree for mail fraud at 19 years old. My house was the only house on the entire block that wasn't burglarized. Okay? I can't even begin to tell you the crimes I've committed and the things I've done and the people that I've hurt and taken advantage of. Okay, I was an animal. Okay? Wasn't a good person. Wasn't a nice person. I didn't give a damn about anybody. Okay, as a result of living like an animal, I was insane. I didn't live like an animal because I was insane. I was insane because I lived like an animal. Big difference. What I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous is the actions I take will dictate the mindset I have. Okay, if I'm crazy as a shithouse rat, okay, I'm taking poor action. I am probably hurting people. I am taking unconscionable actions. Okay, but because I know when I take loving, kind actions towards people, whether they deserve it or not, my life's good. I'm peaceful. I'm serene. I feel love. I see people. I want to do things for strangers. Okay, how do I know how well I'm doing? Not how well I feel. Let me say it again. How do I know how well I'm doing? Not how well I feel. It's how I think you guys are doing. Now, if I think you guys are all asses, I'm not doing well. If I think about the people in my life thinking, what a jerk, he's a pig, you know, and I'm so judgmental about all those people, I'm not doing well. But when I can look at the same guy with love and kindness and look at his incremental progress and go, oh man, he's really coming along, I'm doing okay. Okay, I gotta stay where I perceive you guys as being okay. Okay. When I perceive you guys as the enemy and like judgmental and pricks, you know, I am the one who has the problem. Okay, because I'm afraid. I don't do well with fear. Every one of my character defects crops up and rears its ugly face when I'm afraid. The kind of person I am capable of being when I'm afraid is a horrible, horrible person. Every character, if I'm going to cheat on somebody in a relationship, it's because I'm afraid. If I'm going to steal, it's because I'm afraid. If I'm going to lie, if I'm going to gossip, if I'm going to be judgmental, if I'm going to be racist, if I'm going to do any of those things, it's because I'm afraid. Okay, on page 62 in the big book, it says, selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles, driven by 100 forms of fear. Self-delusion, self-seeking, self-pity. Okay, what I do is when I'm afraid, I lash out and I hurt people. Okay, I forget about it. They turn around and do it back. I don't see what I did. I only see what they did. I feel hurt. I feel betrayed. And I'm going to get you back, you son of a bitch. Okay, and it's all because I'm afraid. I got to live without fear. The only way I know how to live without fear is by being a service to somebody else. I can't have two thoughts in my mind at the same time. I can't have you and me in my mind at the same time. If I'm thinking about you, your well-being, it's impossible for me to be afraid. I know that as a fact. Okay, maybe if I have a lot of personalities, that doesn't apply. Okay, maybe I need to think about a lot of other people at the same time. Okay, but if I'm thinking about you, okay, and I'm thinking about, okay, I'm going to help this person, I'm going to be a service to this person, I can't think about myself. It unplugs me from the problem. It's impossible for me to be afraid when I'm thinking about somebody else. Okay? Because look at it this way. Oh, I'm afraid somebody's going to die. Okay, my grandfather. He was sick. He was in the hospital. I watched him die for 2 years. I went to the hospital. Okay, I'm a nurse. I'm an ER nurse. So I went to the hospital as his advocate. I had the chief of nursing on. I had everybody. I'm going, dude, what is this? Why aren't you checking the labs? What the hell's going on here? Give him some Lasix. He can't breathe. You know, and I'm going through everything. I'm reading. I am doing everything I can to keep this guy alive. He comes out of the hospital. Back, he had to go to the nursing home. He's there for a little bit. He's going back in the hospital. And they went back and forth. And it was, you know, I put a lot of time, a lot of effort. Okay, why? Because when somebody dies, I am not the guy at the funeral crying. Because I feel no guilt. I'm the guy at the funeral going, oh man, he's in a better place. I did what I can do. I did everything I possibly could do. Okay, I'll tell you, 6 kids in my family, I was the one that was at the hospital. I was the only one not crying at the funeral. Okay? I was the only one not crying. I didn't feel sad. I just was like, oh my God, he's in a better place. You know, did what I could do. I gave it everything I had. Okay, Alcoholics Anonymous teaches me that. Okay, I went from a taker in life, every situation, I take whatever I can to try to be a service in situations. I'm not perfect, nobody is. Okay, but I'm a hell of a lot better than I used to be. Okay, I went from Wall Street to nursing. Big change. Okay. If you don't know, it's not an increase in salary. It ought to be. It ought to be. Okay? But it's not. Okay? I didn't want to do it. Okay? But it was obvious that I needed to make that turn. It was obvious I needed to do something different. Okay? Because I think about myself way too much. What Alcoholics Anonymous is awesome and excellent at doing is giving me lots of goodies and toys and relationships in my life. The problem is, everything that I get in Alcoholics Anonymous interferes with me doing AA. You know what I mean? You give me money, property, prestige, you give me a beautiful job, a wife, a career, you give me all that stuff. Okay, what happens? I get terrified of losing it. I put more and more effort into trying to keep it. Okay, I do less and less AA. Okay, my experience in Alcoholics Anonymous is my stranglehold on everything in my life pulls me away from Alcoholics Anonymous. Okay? I gotta let it go. It's not, I'll tell you, I love my daughter. Okay? I love my daughter. Okay? When she went to college, okay, I had to let her go. Now, her mother's alcoholic, I'm alcoholic. Okay? Now you have a little girl. You're gonna send her. You don't know. You know. You see horror story. I mean, I've seen a lot of stuff happen. I've seen horrendous things happen to girls when they drink and when they go to college. I've seen it. I've heard it. I go to rehab. I mean, 23 years of going to rehabs and detoxes and adolescent rehab and seeing a lot of stuff. You see stuff that's just heartbreaking. And when she's going to college, man, I was terrified. I was like, oh damn, you know. But what I did before college was I tried to instill principles that I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous with my daughter. I tried to teach her how to make good decisions. Okay, I tried to not insulate or isolate my daughter from Alcoholics Anonymous. I watched out for her. I made sure that, you know, some like creepy person wasn't like, you know, hitting on her, okay? But what I did was I let her watch me sponsor people in Alcoholics Anonymous. So what she did was she had like a front row seat to like watch what people were like. She would see some people come in Alcoholics Anonymous, follow direction, get sober, build their lives back together, have children, get married, you know, and do all the great things in life. And she saw some other people, okay, over her 19 years on this planet, not listen, be belligerent, get drunk, and die. She's seen other people go to jail. She's seen all sorts of horrible situations with men and women. Okay, and what she's able to do is she's able to look at people that she goes to school with and size them up. Her roommate, freshman year in college, as a result of me being in Alcoholics Anonymous, her watching me in Alcoholics Anonymous, the girl, they go out to this like party. All the girls go, all the boys go, they go to this party. Her roommate decides to give her number out to a whole bunch of boys that she didn't know. My daughter goes, oh, so you're a hoe. Right? The girl's like, huh? I said, yeah, well, that's what girls are called, that indiscriminately give their numbers out to boys that are drunk. They she doesn't know. The girl was a little offended. Okay? My daughter had no malice. She had no malice. She's telling the truth. She said, well, so you're a hoe. No big deal. She treated her with respect besides it, you know. She said, but I'm not going to hang out with you. I don't hang out with people like you. What happened was that relationship culminated where that girl leaned on my daughter through the first year. Okay? And she would talk to my daughter about how was it possible that my daughter would stay in and study when everybody else was drunk. She didn't feel the necessity of buckling to peer pressure. Okay? That she would go out with people that weren't drinking, that weren't partying, that weren't getting in trouble. Okay? But when there was nobody to go out with, she would stay in. Okay? Because she wasn't willing to compromise her character. You know, I'll tell you, before Alcoholics Anonymous, I had no character. I didn't stand up for what I believed in. You guys taught me that. You guys taught me how to be unpopular. Now, if let me tell you something. If somebody doesn't hate you, if no one hates you, what I can tell you for certain about you, okay, is you don't live by principles. Okay? Because I guarantee you, a guy like me, tell me the truth, I will hate you. I mean, I'll like you in a month or two when I see that, you know, when I see what really happened. Okay, but I will hate you. Anybody who tells the truth will be hated, at least temporarily. Who hates you today will love you tomorrow. Who loves you today will hate you tomorrow. Okay, the fact is, for me, as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, I accept that some of you may hate me. I don't care. Okay, I also accept the fact that some of you may love me. I don't care. Not my business. My business is that I love me, that I care about me, that I can put my head on the pillow and go, ha, ah, another day. I don't think I hurt anybody today. If I can live a day where I don't think I hurt anybody, I'm not saying be nice to them. Okay? I'm saying hurt. Big difference. I mean, I can be a prick to try to help somebody. Okay? I remember I was sponsoring this one guy in Hawaii. He was screwing around in the meeting, so I kicked him in the shin. Got his attention. Okay? Maybe it helped him, maybe it didn't. I was trying to help him. Pay attention, son of a bitch, you know? I don't believe that I have to be totally orthodox. I don't believe that I have to be nice and gentle and kind and like lovey-dovey. I'm dealing with alcoholics. Okay, I'm talking with people that rob people, that beat people up. You know, you want to get my attention? You talk to me like how I'll understand. I was sponsoring this kid, Joe, and he said I could tell the story. He was living in on my couch for a little bit, and he had a lot of problems, and I didn't know what to do with him, right? And one day, he goes to me. He goes, I'm not doing so well. He goes, I didn't go get drunk. And I said, I think it's a bad idea, Joe, but I can't babysit you today. What I'll do is I'll drop you off at the ER. Maybe you could tell one of the patients there your story. You see a drunk come in, you tell them your story, maybe you'll feel better. If not, you feel worst case scenario, you tell them you want to check in. You know? Yeah. So I said, call me, I'll come pick you up, you know, at lunchtime. No call at lunchtime. 5 o'clock he calls. He goes, Jim, they have me in the psych unit. I said, wait a minute, there's not a psych unit. I was in York, Pennsylvania. He goes, well, I'm in Harrisburg. I said, that's 40 minutes away. I said, what are you doing there? He said, I'm suicidal. I said, wait a minute, Joe, you're not suicidal. Why would you call? Come on. He goes, no, I want to kill myself. I said, Joe, find out if you can have visitors. He said, okay, hold on. They say, yeah, you can come up. So I go up, I bring this little kid, Kevin, I'm sponsoring. We go up to Harrisburg. They let us in the psych unit. He has his own room. I mean, he's a homeless guy. All of a sudden, he's got his own room. I'm like, oh, that's pretty. Joe, you're doing pretty well here. So I sit down. Kevin sits down. I go, Joe, what's going on? He goes, I'm suicidal. Come on, Joe. That's ridiculous. He goes, no, I want to kill myself. Joe, come on. You're ridiculous. Come on. No, I'm serious. I want to die. I said, are you serious, Joe? You want to die?
Yeah, I want to die. I'm suicidal.
I said, okay. Kevin, watch the door. Kevin goes over by the door. I pull the pillow out from under his head. I jump up on the bed, and I start suffocating him. Right? I'm holding the pillow over his head, and all of a sudden, he starts bucking. He's trying to get me off. I'm like, what the hell? What the hell? What the hell? What the hell? You know, and finally, I pull the pillow off. He's like, I don't want to die. I don't want to die. I said, okay, Joe, now we're getting somewhere. Now, I don't know if that's the right course of therapy. Okay? It's not something I was going to tell my sponsor about. But that man never told anyone he wanted to die again. He's still sober. It's 10 years later. He's doing quite well. Another thing I never told my sponsor was, I was working at University Hospital in the ER, and I got one of those bags of toe tags, right? And I start handing them out in AA. I was like, oh, look at you. Why don't you fill this out? I've been watching you. He's like, what? I said, just tie it on your toe. You're going to be using it. You better get to more meetings. That I didn't get a warm reception over that one either. I'm certainly not a spokesperson for Alcoholics Anonymous. Okay? I don't know anything about anything. I just know that if I do a lot of AA, I feel freaking amazing. Okay, I'm not worried about being judged. If I'm doing a lot of AA, I'm generally not getting arrested. Okay? If I'm doing a lot of AA, I generally don't have people trying to kill me. Okay? If I'm doing a lot of AA, I feel pretty comfortable. Okay? I feel pretty comfortable. Okay? I gotta do a lot of AA. I'm an AA fanatic. Okay? I wanna be an AA fanatic. I wanna surround myself with people that are AA fanatics because I will get off track. If you're an alcoholic, I guarantee you, you will get off track. Okay? I don't have the discipline to go to meetings every day. I don't have the discipline to call my sponsor every day. I don't have the discipline to work the steps every day. I don't have that discipline. You know what kind of discipline I have? I have the discipline to join a new health club every year. Okay? Right. I'm not going to ride it through the whole goddamn year. It sounds like a good idea. I want to look like they look, but I don't want to do the work to do it. Okay? You know what I mean? I like pizza. Right? I like pizza. You know, I'm willing to eat like a pig, and then I'm going to starve. Okay? Then I'm going to eat like a pig to reward myself. Okay? I don't want to maintain any sort of regimen. I am totally undisciplined. Alcoholics Anonymous tricks me into doing AA. How? Sponsoring people. Just keep saying yes. Go to rehab, go to jails, go to detoxes, sign up. Whenever they need somebody, just volunteer and forget about it. And all of a sudden, you're going to have to do it. It's gonna come up, and it's like, oh my God, look at that, you know. And is it inconvenient? Absolutely. Is it essential? For a guy like me, it is essential. I need to do AA. I need to go on road trips. Okay. I mean, I have to go to Maine. I don't even know when this guy asked me to speak in Maine. I don't want to go. It's freaking cold up there, right? As far as like 7 hours, it's gas and traffic. I don't want to go. You know what I mean? I'm gonna end up sleeping on some guy's couch or something uncomfortable, or I'm gonna spend a couple $100 in a hotel, or you know what I mean? But I go. Okay, I gotta go to Vegas in December to speak. Okay, I don't want to go. I don't want to go. I don't even want to speak tonight. I tried to get like 8 people to speak. Like I did. I was like, hey, can you speak? No. I'm like on my phone. I want to go to the movies. You know what I mean? I want to go to dinner. You know what I mean? I want to have a good... I don't want to do AA. I mean, I'm 23 years sober. Okay? I've done a lot of AA. I think I ought to be able to take a couple years off. Okay? Fact is, I can't. If I want to stay alive, I got to do AA. I got to keep volunteering to do stuff. I got to keep showing up and do it. I am a proponent of doing the steps quickly. Quickly. First pass. I'm not one of these guys, do it and you're done. No. I'm one of these guys that say, okay, you're new to AA. if you're desperate and you're willing to follow direction and do some things that you think are insane, but you're so desperate you're willing to do them anyway, then I believe you're ready to go through the steps. Okay? So what I do is I get a new guy. If he wants my help, I'll tell him to call me. I might give him a little reading assignment. I might say, read the doctor's opinion, then call me back. Sometimes they do it, sometimes they don't. If he does do it, I've got to talk to him a little bit. I'll have him meet me at my home group, or I'll have him come to my home group, and I tell him to wear a tie. Now, in my home group, we all wear ties. The guys wear ties, the girls dress up a little bit. I don't really give a damn, okay, what they do. Okay, but if a guy is willing to wear a tie to an AA meeting, chances are he's admitting the second half of the first step, which is life is unmanageable. Because the only time I'm willing to follow some stupid direction some other guy tells me to do is if I believe that I don't have the solution. Now, if he's willing to do that, I am willing to lay down my life to try to save him. I should take him through the steps, and I'll do it quick. Okay, the first night at my home group, I'll take him through the first three steps, get him writing his fourth step. Okay, I'll make a date to do his fifth step. If he's really insane and he wants to drink and he can't stop his head, that night I will take him through the fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, and begin him on his eighth step. Okay, the next day I'll start him on his ninth step. It doesn't have to be perfect, it doesn't have to be pure, he doesn't even have to do a damn good job, he just has to start. It's easy to improve upon something I start, it's impossible to improve on something I haven't started. Okay, going through the steps of first round, what it did was it just took the edge off. It just took the edge off. It made me feel somewhat human. Okay, I wasn't doing well after that. I was still insane. I was still crazy. I was still like, my head was still eating me alive. Okay, but after that, what I do is I get the new guy trying to sponsor other new guys. So what you want to do is get a new guy and take him through the first couple steps. Now, he doesn't know that he's not qualified to do that. But if I can convince him to do it, I see remarkable progress. Okay, we had a guy that, it was six years ago I sponsored him. Ted, I don't know if you remember Steve. Okay, but, well, Steve, he's not that tall, but this guy Steve, I sponsored him 6 years ago. He went through his steps, and at 35 days, he was still pretty insane. He's like, I'm thinking about suicide. I said, well, you might be one of those alcoholics who might need to sponsor other guys right away. He's like, oh yeah. So we took him to the midnight meeting in New York. Okay. Some guy shares he just got out of jail. He can't stop drinking. He doesn't know how he's going to stay sober. Okay. He, you know, and then, you know, moved on to the next guy. The new guy got done sharing and he bolted out of the meeting. I elbow Steve. I go, Steve, go get him. He goes, what do you want me to do? Put a net over him? I said, no. I want you to go get him. I want you to buy him some dinner. Take him to McDonald's. Get him some food. Sit him down on the sidewalk and tell him your story. He said, okay. I come out of the meeting 45 minutes later. He's sitting there just finishing telling him his story. He goes, what do I do now? I said, okay, give him $5. Tell him he can eat with three of it and to use the other two to call you tomorrow morning. Tell him if he calls you tomorrow morning, you'll come get him and you'll take him through the rest of it. You'll take him through the steps. He goes, okay. Sure enough, the guy called him the next morning. Okay, he's going to pick him up. The new guy, of course, he did some heroin that night, so he's nodding in and out of the back seat. I said, well, just read him the doctor's opinion. You know, so he's shaking the new guy, reading him. The moral of the story is, 9 days later, at 35 days sober, he had the new guy, 9 days later, through the first eight steps. Now, the new guy started making amends. He started speaking at some meetings. He got distracted, went to another group, slept with the secretary's fiance, went off, overdosed, and died. But Steve celebrated 6 years 2 months ago. Okay, at 1 year, Steve sponsored six guys. Of those six guys, five are still sober. Okay, that's a big deal. Because you know what? If you have a few months sober, a year sober, and you start working with a new guy, you're not going to be as intimidating as somebody who's been around 20 years and who's a complete prick. Okay? Okay? Because when I talk to a new guy, I'm going to talk to him like I know how to talk to him. Okay, but if you're a new guy and you're talking to another guy that's a little bit new, you're going to take it a little easier. You're going to be a little more gentle. You're going to be more understanding, and he's going to actually do things that you want him to do, and maybe you can cultivate him into somebody who actually wants to stay sober. Okay? Alcoholics Anonymous. When I was new, my sponsor had 2 years. Why? Because the guys with 10 years scared the shit out of me. They were too direct, they were too honest, they were too real, I couldn't handle it. My sponsor today has 52 years. Okay, he lives in California. I try not to talk to him all that much because he's scary. Okay, he yells at me. He hangs up on me. You know? He's like, goddamn newcomer, click. I mean, I got 23 years. Okay, but for somebody who's got 52, what does he care? Okay? I got to find somebody who's further down the path. Okay, you get a sponsor, you say you're new, you get a sponsor, okay, who's 1 year sober. Okay, at a year and a half, okay, you're 6 months sober, he's a year and a half sober, you're catching up. You know what I'm saying? You get a little, as time goes by, having a sponsor that's a year or 2 years sober longer than you, you know, he's having a bad day, you feel sorry for him. You know, it's neck and neck for a while. What happens is you end up developing friends in Alcoholics Anonymous. Okay? And hopefully, if you're serious about staying sober, you're going to pick somebody a little bit further down the path who's got more life experience, who was way too scary to deal with when you were brand new. Okay? We need new people in Alcoholics Anonymous to sponsor other new people in Alcoholics Anonymous. Okay? This is just the way it works. Bill Wilson, founder of Alcoholics Anonymous, in 1935, said to his wife, Lois, before AA even happened, he was in the Oxford group. He goes, Lois, every day for 5 months I've been telling my story. Doesn't work. Not one of these boobs stayed sober yet. Not one of them. I guess I was wrong. She goes, Bill, it must work because you've never been able to stay sober for 5 months before. I'm not here to get you sober. I'm not here to keep you sober. I'm here to keep me sober. Maybe somebody will hear something that will motivate them to do something different. Not my business. What I know is that the guys that came to AA in 1987 that told me their story, that were active in the rehab, detox, jails, those guys are still sober. All of them. All of them. I'm not kidding. The ones that didn't die, okay, they're still sober. Without exception, every guy I know that was doing rehab and detox work back then, okay, 20-something years later, is still sober, still on the ball. Now, you can't say that for the general population of Alcoholics Anonymous. Okay, there are many, many parts of the big book that say, I need to help others. You know, in Bill Wilson's story, he talks about his wife, he and his wife going back to his old hospital in despair. He says, upon talking to a man there, I was amazingly lifted up. It's a design for living that works in rough going. You know, later, in his story, he talks about how self-sacrifice for other people, okay, is sort of like money in the bank. It's the only defense I have against the hard times that are going to come. Okay, I don't need to do a lot of AA when my life is difficult. Let me say that again. I don't need to do a lot of AA when my life is difficult. When I have a lot of shit going on in my life, I don't need to do a lot of AA. I need to do a lot of AA a month before that. I gotta be prepared. God forbid my mom dies. God forbid something happens to my daughter. God forbid I get fired. God forbid I go to jail. God forbid something happens. I gotta be prepared. What I'm doing today is gonna set me up for next week, next month. Okay, so I'll be okay when the shit hits the fan. Okay, because the shit will hit the fan. Things are going to happen to everybody in here. You're going to have a bad day. You're going to get fired. You're going to get diseases. You're going to get cancer. You're going to get heart attacks. Shit is going to happen. Okay, and when it does, if I'm not prepared because I'm doing Alcoholics Anonymous today, I am going to die. Okay, I see people die all the time. I had a sponsee hang himself a few months ago. Okay? What are you going to do? Okay, my mind will eat me alive where I'm either going to kill myself, drink, or work the steps. There's no other alternative. Okay, you can hop me up on all sorts of medication. You know, that only works for a little bit for a guy like me. I got to do AA. I got to be relieved of the bondage itself. Okay? I don't know what else to talk about. The 12 steps is a good one. Making amends. I'll tell you one amends story. I hated my mother. Now, if you're a guy and you hate your mother, what I can tell you for sure is that your relationships with women suck. Okay? That's just the way it is. Okay? If I hate my mother, I can't love another woman. That's my experience. Okay? I remember somebody said to me, because I didn't want to make amends to my mother. This guy goes up to me and goes, Jim, did you ever sit next to somebody that was really angry? Everybody in the room knows the guy is really, really angry. And I said, yeah. He goes, that's you. I didn't know. I had no idea what a miserable son of a bitch I was. Okay? But I did know that I couldn't stay in a relationship. I did know that I couldn't make the... You know what I mean? So what I needed to do was to stop hating my mother. I was given a suggestion that every day I pray that my mom gets everything out of life that I wanted. Okay? And at that point, I wished I was suicidal. Okay? But I prayed that my mother would be happy, that she'd have a joyful, prosperous life. Every day, I got on my knees, and I prayed for her to do well. 2 weeks later, my daughter's in daycare. I'm walking down the hall. This kid's walking toward me. He's got buck teeth out to here. I go, oh, my God. I hope his parents, and I'm thinking to myself, I hope his parents have money for braces. And then I froze. I froze. I remember I was 12 years old. My mom didn't have a pot to piss in. My stepfather just died of leukemia. Okay? I sat there, and I had, like, tears running down my cheeks because me, my brother, and sister all had braces at the same time. And that was the first time my life I ever knew that my mother loved me. And I was like, oh, my God, she loved me. And I went over to her house, and I told her, you know what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous, making amends. Okay, it's like allocute. Okay, for those of you who like the plea bargain process in the courts, okay, when you plea bargain, you agree to some reduced charge, they want you to get up there and admit what you did in a general way. They call that allocute. Okay, in Alcoholics Anonymous, we call it making amends. Okay, what I need to do, it's not the robbing your money of the family maker. You know, it's not that, like, you know, that I yelled at you. Okay, what the worst thing I could do for anybody on this planet, the worst crime I could commit is to rob your sanity. Okay, because what I would do to my mother is I'd say, Mom, can I use your car? I just want to go to the store. I'll be right back. And I'd come back 2 days later. And she'd say, Jimmy, you told me you're going to bring it. I said, no, I didn't. And I would stick, and I would slowly drive her insane. I'd have my hand in her pocketbook, taking her money. She goes, Jimmy, no, I was just moving it. You know? And I would slowly drive her insane. Was that you last night that came in? You're making all this damn... It wasn't me. You know? Was that you who threw up the entire length of the count? No, it wasn't me. And I would deny everything. I never... any will. So I drove people in my life insane. So what I did with the amends process is I confessed to what I did, right? And the direction my sponsor gave me was, you tell her what you did, okay? And you say, did I leave anything out? And what can I do to make it right? Not is there anything to do, what can I do to make it right? And then you shut up and take it. Whatever she says, just stand there. Don't say a goddamn thing. So I said it. I was like, okay. She went on for 45 minutes. I was like, oh, my God. And she just wouldn't stop. She goes, you know, we got a scanner. You know we had a scanner? Yeah. That's to listen, because you were driving a motorcycle. You're drunk all the time. You're bringing guns into the house, and you're doing this, and you're doing that. And I'm like, oh, and I had to say, I was like, she finally gets to the very end, and she goes, you know, I wasn't a very good mother. I got pregnant when I was 15. I didn't know how to love you. And I'm crying, like, because that's what I always wanted to hear. I wanted to hear that she was sorry, that she wasn't the best mother. I knew she wasn't the best mother. What she did was she made amends to me for not being the person that she ought to have been as a mother. She was crying, I was crying, and all of a sudden, we had a relationship. The first time in my life. Okay, that's the initial part of an amends. Okay, the real part of an amends was when her husband, my current stepfather, could not work. Okay, I hired him for a basically no-show job for one of my companies, and for 11 years I paid their mortgage as I lived in a small apartment. Why? Because of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not a good guy. I'm not a good son. Okay, but what you guys teach me is that you push me to do the right thing. You teach me to do what I'm supposed to do. Okay, because the people in Alcoholics Anonymous, we are the heroes of our culture. There's not a lot of people do it. There's not a lot of societies that build charactered people. Okay, but this is where it's happening. Okay, Alcoholics Anonymous, man, this is the best show on earth. I mean, this is some good stuff here. If you're not getting the results from Alcoholics Anonymous, if you don't have deep, deep, deep relationships, okay, if you don't have people that you love more than your own life, okay, maybe you want to jump into the deep end of the AA swimming pool, get direction from some son of a bitch, okay, that knows you better than you know yourself, because that's what I need to do. I need somebody in my life to push me, to keep pushing me to be more than I can be. Nobody in my family ever graduated college. Okay? I've got 3 college degrees. That does not happen in my family. We go to jail. Okay? We don't protect our children. They get molested. Okay? They go into counseling and foster care and all that shit. That my daughter never experienced any of that because of you guys. What you guys saved me. I owe you everything. Of course I'll get in my car and drive an hour to a freaking meeting. Of course I'll throw a few bucks in the basket. Of course I'll do whatever I can. You gave me a life worth living. I had no life worth living. Nothing in my life was good. Everything in my life was good. Big difference. I owe you guys. I appreciate what you've done for me. You've saved my freaking life. You made a life possible for my daughter that's never possible. Thank you.